Welcome, welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim on Daf Yomi. We are now at the beginning of Perek Chi'i of Masachek Tubot, Perek HaKotev L'Ishto. It begins on Daf Pei Gimel Amud Aleph at the beginning of the Amud. And we have Mishnah Aleph in front of us and the attendant Gemara that will take us to Pei Dalet Amud Aleph. And in continuing our discussion about a husband's rights relative to his wife's property, we now enter a discussion about the husband's desire or willingness to abdicate some of those rights and what must be done in order for him to do so. Now, let's keep in mind that his rights really reach into three areas which are related. The first one, which is obvious, is achilat perot, and that is the benefit from all of the nichsei melog while they're married comes to him. The second one is yerusha, that if she predeceases him, he inherits the nichsei melog. And the third one is the estoppel, as it were, of on his part, of any sale that she may make with the property while they're married. So now, akotev l'ishto, if a man writes the following, dinu dvarim ein l'minachasayich, I have no claim on your property. Hareza ochel perot b'chayah, first of all, that does not change perot. If he wants to eat perot, he can continue to do so. V'meta yorsha, and if she dies, he still inherits. In other words, his statement at this point seems to have meant nothing. So what was the point of his statement? For the sole purpose of saying that if she, that he has removed himself from being an obstacle to her selling the property. So if she sold it, the sale is valid. By the way, the Mishnah does not address the issue of whether that means lachatchila she may sell, but it does state that it means if she does sell, it's valid. Now, second stage. Katav ladinu dvarim einin v'chasayich uveferotehen. If he added the one word, perotehen, to his abdication, as it were, hareza eino ochel perot p'chayeha. He's removed himself also from perot. But v'meita yorsha. But if she dies, he still does inherit the nichsei melog. Now, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he says, or seems to disagree, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Leolam ochel pere perot, ad shechtov ladinu dvarim ein li merchasach uveferotehen, uveferei perotehen, ad olam. He says that the husband continues to eat pere perot, which means the fruit of the fruit, as an example. If you were to take the fruit of the field, and then use it to buy more land, then the fruit of that field is called pere perot. In other words, he continues to eat that ad shechtov la, until he writes the following formula. Dinu dvarim ein l'machasayich uveferotehen uveferei ferotehen ad olam. Forever. Now the question is, does he have to write forever? Does he have to write pere perotehen? We'll see that in the Gemara. Now, that means that the Chachamim seem to feel that if he wrote perotehen, that removes him from all perot whatsoever, and the only thing that he retains is Yerusha. Rabbi Yehuda seems to feel that, well, yes, he's relinquished perot, but if those perot were somehow used to buy more land, then those perot, which are pere perot, he continues to eat until he explicitly removes himself from that. The last clause in the Mishnah, katav ladinu dvarim ein l'machasach uveferotehen uveferei ferotehen b'chayayich uvemotech. He now has added to the last clause that Rabbi Yehuda added, but instead of ad olam, he said b'chayayich uvemotech, meaning I am removing any claim that I have to your property and to the perot and the peri perot when you're alive and when you're dead, which is clearly aimed at Yerusha. Eino achal perot b'chayav meta eino yorsha. It works. Now, Rosham Gamliel disagrees. Imei omer, imeita yirashana. He says all of that's true except for the Yerusha. If she dies, he still inherits. Why? Because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds, we see it in Bava Batra in the 8th parak, Rabban Shimon Gamliel maintains that Yerushata Baal, the fact that the husband inherits his wife's property, is deoraita, from the word she'ero, in Bamidbar Chav Zayin, v'chomenel mashkatu batorat no'o batel. And operating on the general rule that we saw back in the beginning of the 5th parak, anyone who makes a t'nai to that would eradicate a rule of the Torah, the t'nai is invalid. So, for instance, we saw that if a man says harayat mekudeshet li amanat she'en lach alai she'er ksut v'ona, we had the opinion of Rabbi Meir, which is matnel mashkatu b'torah t'na ubatel, therefore the kiddushin are good, and he still owes her sherek suta and ona. So now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel maintains that Yerushat HaBaal is the oraita, and therefore when the man says, I am removing myself from inheriting your property, that statement is void. That's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Good. Now, the Gemara immediately points that Rabbi Chiya had a different version of our Mishnah. Tana Rabbi Chiya ha'omer li'ishto. He didn't have a kotev li'ishto, he had ha'omer li'ishto, which makes the activity here even weaker legally. He didn't write anything, he just said it. But the question here is, if he does write it, and certainly if he says it, why would that have any impact whatsoever? Who cares if he writes that? If a man writes to his friend, I've got a field, and I'm saying I have no claim on this field, and I got nothing to do with it, and my hands removed from it. In other words, when you own something, you cannot pass it to somebody else by just walking away. You have to actively give it to them. So by saying, this field, I have nothing to do with this field, I'm gone with it for this field, that's a meaningless statement until you say, I'm giving it to you. So in the same way, how could the same wording, dinu dvarim einam ben achasayich, be meaningful at all in the case of the wife? So Amri devei Rabbi Yanai, bekotev lavoda arusa, if he wrote this before they got married. In other words, before the field became under his purview, the property became under his control, he wrote, Dinu Dvarim Einam Chasayich. Now that rests on two arguments, or two axioms. First of all, Kedarav Kana, Damarav Kana, Nachala Bala Adam Makom Acher, Adam Ne'alda Shulay Rashana. A Nachal, an inheritance that comes to a man from another place. What does another place mean? Not the normal Yerushalayim. In other words, not from father or from brothers, etc., but nachala that comes to him from outside the family, in this case, marriage, a person can make a tanai beforehand not to accept it. Which means I know I'm entering into this marital relationship, and in advance I am removing the Yerusha that's going to come to me. But it rests on another prong. He said that if a person says, I am not interested in getting the benefit of takanat chachamim that was made for me, in such a case, we have to see what such a case is, then we accept it. We allow him to forgive it. Now, what's the model, the index case that he was talking about? Mikey Gonzu, Karavuna Marav, Damravuna Marav, Ichola Ishash Tomar Labala, Inini Zonat Veniosa. A woman has the right to say to her husband, I'm not going to give you my wages, and I'm not going to accept Mizonot. That's based on the premise that the Mizonot is really the key takanat chachamim that was given to her, and as a quid pro quo, he gets the wages. So if she, who the entire takana was for her benefit to make sure she gets fed, if she says, look, I'm making $500,000 a year and my food bill is $5,000 a year, I'll keep my wages and you don't have to feed me, she has the right to do that. So, in other words, a person has the right to say, here is a takana chachamim that was made for my benefit. In this case, achilat peirot. In this case, my control over her field. And it is a nachala that's coming to me from outside the family. I can make a tanai not to accept it. Very good. So that works. Now, so if that's the case, then why are we limiting ourselves to having him make this statement before they're married? Even after they're married, he could say, all future benefits from this field, payrot from this day on, Yerusha stopping you from selling it, I'm backing off of that because you made this for my benefit. The answer is as follows. Once they're married, then his control over the field is equal to her control. And he is no longer a recipient, he is now a co-owner. And a co-owner cannot separate himself from the property, he cannot dissolve his ownership by simply saying, I'm no longer involved. He has to gift it. All right, Rav Amar Yado Adifa Miyada. Parenthetically, Rav disagrees with the Baya and says that when you're married, your control over the property is even stronger than the wife's control. Now, that doesn't affect our issue at all. It explains why Nesua would not work. But Nafkamina with Shomeret Yavam. The only Nafkamina between Rav and Abaya is a Sugi and Yavamot with a Shomeret Yavam in which, important to note this, in which property fell to her while she was married to the first husband. The first husband then died. This question is, if she dies subsequently, what happens to the property that fell to her? Do we say that since Yado ki Yada, therefore that property gets split equally between her parents' family and the husband's family? Or do we say Yado Adifa Miyada, and that property really belongs to the husband's family, and the parents' family would have to prove otherwise, which they can't do, to get it out? But that's again not our issue. Now, Ibayaluhu. question was asked, Kanomiado. Now, this is not talking about our Mishnah. This is talking about the proof case that we brought on the first line of the Gemara, that if a person says, Dino Dvarim, I'm removing myself from this field, what happens if he said it, but he also made a kinyan? And was he said it, and then they made a kinyan sudar of some sort, on this statement of separation? Mahu, does it work? And as we're saying, that the statement alone doesn't work. Writing it doesn't work. Saying it doesn't work. But what if he either says it or writes it, even just says it, but then makes a kinyan to confirm the statement? Rav Yosef midinu dvarim kano miyado. Rav Yosef says very simple. What you said was meaningless. You made a kinyan to back something up meaningless. 1,000 times zero is still zero. Doesn't matter how powerful the thing is, you're still using it to substantiate a nothing. So therefore, there's nothing there. Nachman Amar Migufish al Karka Kanamiyado. Rav Nachman disagrees and says, once you made the kinyan, then it's clear that you are affecting the karka itself and not the theoretical dinu dvarim, and therefore the kinyan is full and the other guy now owns the property. This is simply a circuitous way of doing what would be very simple, to gift it to him. Now, Amar Abaye, Mistabra Milton Rav Yosef Be'orer. He said, Rav Yosef's ruling would make sense in a case of orer, meaning in a case where the original owner, after the new owner moves in, the original owner comes up and says, what are you doing here? After all, I just meant I don't want to fight with you about this property. Dinu dvarim, I didn't mean I was giving it to you. So if he challenges it, then we should accept what Rav Yosef said and say that even the kinyan was just there to bolster a nice sentiment, but nothing real. But if the guy stays on the property for a few days and the original owner is walking past and doesn't protest at all, here we don't need a full chazak of 18 months or 3 years, then it's pretty clear that he really meant to gift it to him, and that the kinyan, bolstering the statement, the nudvarim together, makes a gift. Now, Amar Meimar, Hilchata Migufesh HaKarka Kanamiyado. So Meimar then reported that the halacha is like Rav Nachman. So Rashi turns to Amemar and says, Be'orer or Be'omeid? He says, well, let's go back to Abaye 2 generations ago and see on which leg of Abaye's statement are you commenting the halachas of Nachman? Are you saying, like Abaye said, which is Be'omeid, or are you saying even Be'orer, even when the original owner protests the next day and says, what are you doing on my land? Would you still say, too bad, you made a kinyan and it's the other fellows? So the Ma'inaf Kamina, Lechrav Yosef. Right? So the question is, do we accept Rav Yosef? Amar said, I didn't hear such a thing. Meaning, I didn't hear a distinction between Orer and Omeid. Klomar, what does that mean? Lo Svirali. It doesn't mean I never heard about it. It says, I heard about it, I just don't buy that there's any distinction. Which means Amemar essentially, fundamentally disagreed with Abaye's distinction, and said that Rav Nachman's statement should be accepted halacha across the board, regardless of how the original owner reacts the next day when he sees the fellow on the field, if he walks by whistling or if he protests. Doesn't matter, it's his. Now, the Mishnah then said in the first clause that when you write Dinu Dvarim Eilem Achasayich, it doesn't help for any purpose because you still eat Perot and still get Yerusha. It's an Imkein Lama Katavla. So, what was the whole value of writing it? Is that simply that if she sells it, the sale is valid. Now, V'teimalei Mikol Milis Likat Nafshach, why doesn't the woman turn around and say, hey, wait a second, you wrote Dinu Dvarim, you're out of here. Why can't she say that? Marbaya Yad Balashtar Al-Tachtona. Abaye says very simply, we don't know what the guy meant. We know that he removed something of himself, and you, the one who's coming to claim that something new has happened, you're the Baal HaShtar, but the Shtar itself is murky. The Shtar itself is opaque. It's not very clear as to what it means. You have to prove what it means. So you would have to prove that the husband really intended to remove himself from Yerusha and from Perot and everything else. So now, let's see what the most reasonable thing he would have removed himself from is. Maybe he removed himself from Perot and kept Yerusha, meaning he kept the deed, but not the benefits. A person would rather have a small, ripe fruit today than to have a gourd that you have to wait a few weeks for it to be ready. In other words, a Perot is the least likely thing the guy's going to remove himself from, because that's $1,000 in the bank this week, as opposed to some future possible windfall, even though it might be much bigger. Ve'imam Yerusha, so perhaps the guy removed himself from Yerusha, which is long down, might be down the line, maybe way down the line. Abaye mita shchicha michira lo shchicha. Abaye says, it's very simple. Everybody dies. And in an average case, the chances that this woman's going to predecease her husband, maybe 50-50. But michira, that the woman would sell her property, people don't sell property that often. And therefore, if he's going to give something up, he's going to give And evidently the sense is he's doing this out of goodwill. He's doing this to seem like a nice guy. He's doing this because the woman maybe was a little reticent about disclosing her assets. Want to make her feel good? Do it to him. Good. But what did he remove himself from? From the least likely thing that he's going to feel bad about. And that's going to be something that doesn't occur that often, which is her rights to sell. When a person removes himself from something he has rights over, he always removes himself from that which is least likely to affect him. So that means that if she dies, I inherit. I'm not going to remove myself from that. Peirot, I'm not going to remove myself from that. If she goes ahead and sells it, all right, that's the least likely thing. Good. Now, Rav Ashi has a different take. He says, you know why when the man says, that doesn't affect Peirot and it doesn't affect Yerusha, it only affects her sale? It's not because the burden of proof is on her and the most likely thing that he's going to give up is her rights to sell. It's because you look at the exact wording. Rav Ashi darshens the words. Bin nechasayich means v'loba perotan. And you see on the page, I underlined neches. It's, I'm removing myself from control over your property, but not over the benefits from the property. Bin nechasayich, meaning your property, v'lo lachar mita, meaning I'm removing myself from rights to your property while it's yours, but not what happens after you die. That's Yerusha. Now, that's Rav Ashi. Now, back in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Le'olam Ochel Per Perot, Rabbi Yehuda said that if you say perotan, you indeed remove yourself from perot. Rabbi Yehuda said, yes, but you continue to eat Peira Peirot until you write Peira Peirotam Ad Olam. And I have the Nusach on the page. Tanu Rabbanan. Eloin Peirot Veloin Peira Peirot. So what are Peirot and what are Peira Peirot? Hechnisa lo karkovasta Peirot. She brought in a field and into the marriage and it gave produce. I mean, Peirot, that's Peirot. Machar Peirot, let's say you took that produce, you sold it, v'lakach men karka, and you bought karka with it. As we saw in the last parak, what you have to do when there's, when she comes into the marriage and she gets something which is metaltal and you use it and buy karka. So let's say you took the peirot of her field and used it to buy karka, and then that karka, asta peirot, har para peirot, that's para peirot. Now, ibayaluhu, the rabbi yuda, para peirot dafka, odilma adolam dafka, odilma tavayhu dafka. Rabbi Yehuda had a version. What did he say? You have to write perotan uva pera perotan ad olam. Question is, does he require all of those statements? Does he need pera perotan? In which case, why do you need ad olam? Why do you say ad olam? Do you need ad olam and that's the main thing? In which case, why do you say pera perotan? Or do you need them both? In which case, why do you need both? Why do you need to have, why did all three statements have to appear in the Mishnah? Either only one is necessary, so why is the other one there? Or else both are necessary, and why are both necessary? So that's what we will examine right now. Imtim Tzolomar, let's try number one. Pera perotafka. Perhaps all he has to say is, Dinu dvarim elem rachasayach uva peroten uva pera peroten. Just that. Now, adolam lamali, so why did he add the words adolam into his formula? Hakamash malan, kemand chatav la pera perot, kemand chatav la adolam dami. And it's there to teach you that if he writes para-parot, we should imagine as if he wrote Adolam. In other words, para-parotan doesn't just mean for the one stage beyond, but it means perot and para-parot and para-para-parot and as far as you're going to take it. So once you write para-parot, it's as if you wrote Adolam. Okay, good. V'imtim tzolom Adolam dafka on the other leg. If you want to argue that Adolam is the necessary piece, Paraparot lamali, what do you need paraparot for? So hakamash lan afagav the chatav la paraparot, it's there to teach you that even if you wrote paraparot, e katav la adolam in ilolo, that without adolam it's not good enough. So in other words, if Rabbi Yehuda says that adolam is necessary, then the reason that we wrote paraparot in there is to show you that even paraparot is still not going to be enough without adolam. V'im tinsalam atavayo dafka, if you want to argue that you need both, tarta lamali, what do you need both for? Tzricha, you need both. Why? Di katav la per perot v'lo katav la adolam. If you only wrote per perot, havi amena per perot to lo achil. I would think that it's only second level perot. How about perot to per perot? What about third level perot achil? In other words, if he only wrote dino dvarim enem chasaych uva peroten uva pera peroten adolam, then I would pera peroten. Then I would think good. So he's removing himself from essential perot, and from taking those perot and buying karka and buying perot. But he didn't anticipate three steps down the line. Take those, that field, and buy with that field, and get, and buy with those perot another field, and get perot. That's now para para perot, Maybe that's an, that. Maybe that is still his. That's why you need to use the word adolam to say perotan, perperotan, etc. All the way down the line. V'katav adolam v'lo katav perperot. And if it only said adolam, meaning din udvarim einim nachasachu v'perotan adolam, havein ali olam a perot kai. Perhaps it's only referring to perot, and adolam just means not just today and not just this week, but forever. That's why you had to say peraperot, that it's not just temporal adolam, but it is stage adolam, meaning perot, peraperot, peraperot, etc. As far as you can go, he's removing himself from the entire package. Now, ibayalu, katav ladinu dvarim ein lemenachasayich uva peraperot. Let's say the guy wrote nachasayich and peraperot, and he skipped perot. In other words, he went straight to stage two. He went from the field to stage two. Can he still eat perot? In other words, did he say, I'm taking my rights away from the field itself, which means if you sell it, the sale is good, and from perot, which is if we take from the perot from the field and sell them and buy land with that, and that produces that fruit I'm not going to have, but the essential perot I will have. Perhaps. Perhaps when he said perperot, he meant to include perot into the whole package. So the answer is pshita mikol mili salik nafshe. It's obvious that he's removed himself from the whole package. Why? The amar perperot salik nafshe, because if you think he's only removed himself from perperot, perot salik nafshe, kiman dachlino the perot, that means he's going to eat up all the perot. If he's going to eat up all the perot, then there's no way to get perperot. Perperot hecha. But that's not exactly true. Because, think about this. Remember Yehuda's statement, which says that if you wrote, you still eat peraperot until you write that other nusach? But if he's removing himself from perot, that means she's eating up all the perot. If she's eating up all the perot, peraperot mehecha, how could Rabbi Yehuda imagine that you've removed yourself from perot, so the wife is eating the perot, but you're still got peraperot? Where'd those peraperot come from if she's eating up all the perot? The answer is very simple. The Shaira, she eats $1,000 worth of perot, but there's still another $1,000, and she agrees to invest it. That's karka. And this, that, what that produces is now perperot. So hachanam the Shaira. Same thing in our case, is that if the guy said, in our theoretical case, dinu dvarim einim achasayich uva peraperotean, we could be saying, sure, and he keeps the perot, he eats some of them, but some of them he doesn't eat up, some of them he uses to buy land, and that land is peraperot, and that's what he's removed himself from. So that indeed could be the case, that when he said, b'nachasayich uva peraperotan, that he left perot for himself, and of course, if there's perot left over and he buys land, then that will be the peraperot that he's removed himself from. Now, at the end of the Mishnah, Rav Shmuel Gamliel disagreed about one piece of the Mishnah, which is the ruling about Yerusha, and he said a husband can never remove himself from the Yerusha because it's matnal mashkatu b'Torah. Rav Shmuel Gamliel said, Amar Rav. Now, Rav makes the following statement, and then we have three analyses of it. Halachok Rav Shmuel Gamliel v'lo mitameh. The halachos of Rav Shmuel Gamliel, which means Yerusha doesn't work, but not for the same reason. Now, that's all Rav said. My halachok Rav Shmuel Gamliel, tell me, what does that mean? Try one. Is it that the halacha is that you still get the Yerusha? V'lav mitameh, but not for the same reason. Because Rav Shimon Gamliel's reason is because when you make a tanai against the Torah, the tanai is nullified. V'rav savar tanai okayam, and Rav says, I disagree, because I think that when you're matna mashko to v'torah, the tanai works. V'kasav Yerusha abal d'rabanan, and Rav says, but Yerusha is really d'rabanan. And that the Chachamim made their rules stronger than Torah, which we do find sometimes in Shas. In other words, is Rav's reasoning as follows. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, look, Yerusha Tabal is Doraita, and Matneh Mashkatu B'Torah, the Tanai is invalid. But Rav says, the Halacha is like him, but not for the same reason, because I hold that Matneh Mashkatu B'Torah, Tanao Kayam, it works. But I hold Yerusha Tabal is the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan, at least in this instance, made the rules stronger than Torah, that if you make a Tanai against it, it doesn't work. But Savarav Tanai Kayam, that rests on two weird assumptions. Well, one's not so weird, the other's weird. To say that Rav holds Yerusha Tabal is Rabbanan, that's not so bad. But to say that Rav says that if you're Matna Mashka Torah, it works, Since when? I'm selling you some property on some goods on condition that you don't have any claim of onah, of price gouging on me. Onah, the sixth, etc. Rav amar yeshlo alav onah. Rav says the guy buys it and then he can come and claim you overcharged me. Shmuel amar ein lo alav onah. And Shmuel says no, there is no such claim, which means that Rav holds that your tanai is batel. Onah is a doraita, and Rav clearly holds that when you make a condition against the Torah, I'm selling you something and I want it to work differently than the Torah mandated. No onah, so it doesn't work. Ella, so that can't be what Rav's position is. And as again, Rav said one thing, halacha is b'shem gamliel, but not for the same reason. And so now we're trying to figure out what he means. Ella halacha b'shem gamliel da amar hamanel mashgatu b'torah tno o batel. Halacha is like Rishon Gamliel in the Tamatne is batel. V'lam mitame. Rishon Gamliel savar meita yirashana. Rav savar meita lo yirashana. So perhaps what Rav means is this. I agree with Rav Rishon Gamliel about the principle, but I disagree with about the application, because I hold that if she dies, he doesn't inherit it. Well, that doesn't make sense. Hai mitame v'lo kilchatehu. That's the exact opposite. That means that he agrees with the reasoning of Rishon Gamliel, but not with the application. And what his statement was, I agree with the application, but not with the reasoning. Ella, number three. Halak Rishon Gamliel damar meita yirashena. That he agrees with the ruling that you get the Yerusha. V'lam mitame, but not for the same reason. Yidu Rishon Gamliel savar b'doraita tanao batel habarabaran tanao kayam. It's because Rishon Gamliel says it's only when you're matne against the Torah that your tanai is nullified. But if you're matne against something that's rabbinic, the tanai works. Rav Savar, afilu b'drabanan tana'o batel. And Rav says, you know what? Even in drabanan, the tanai is nullified. So that's not really saying that you disagree with Rishon Gamliel's reasoning. Hai ketame uchechatehu. You're saying, I agree with him in ruling, and I agree with him in the reasoning. For Rav Mosifu, and I just take his reasoning one step further. And Rishon Gamliel says that Yerusha Baal's Doraita. Rav seems to agree. And he says, but Rav Shimon Gamliel says the reason that the Tanai doesn't work is because your Matnel Masha Katuba Torah, it's Patel. However, Rav Shimon Gamliel might believe that Matnel Masha Amru Rabbanan is Kayam. And Rav says, you know what? Tanai Batel there also. That's just an extension. Ella, it works as follows. Halach Rav Shimon Gamliel da Amari Meti Rashana V'lav Mitamei. Why? Rav Shimon Gamliel Savar Yushla Baal Do'oraita. He holds that Yerusha is Do'oraita. And he says that only when you make a condition against the Torah, the Tanai is batel. Varav Savar, Yerusha Dabal Durabanan. He disagrees and says that Yerusha is Durabanan. Yerusha Dabal. It's a machloket in Babatra. V'chachamim also chizlik divrem kishel Torah. And he says, however, the rabbis made their ruling as strong as Torah to say that even though we're the ones who are legislating that the husband inherits his wife's property, nonetheless, we're making it as strong as Torah that if you try to make a condition that negates it, the condition is ignored. Now, Rav Savar Yerusha Baal Durabanan, since when does Rav hold that Yerusha, so by the way, that's the end of the analysis, and that's the correct analysis that we've come to, that Rav really does agree with Rav Shimon Gamliel in matter of ruling, that the Yerusha, that if the husband says, Dinu Dvarim, etc., with all of the proper words, indeed, if she sells the property, it's hers, indeed, he doesn't get payout, but if she predeceases him, he does inherit the property, but not because of Shem Galil's reason. Shem Galil's reason is because Yerusha Baal is Doraita, and Matneh Mashka Katuba Torah Tana Obatel. However, the reasoning of Rav is that Yerusha Baal is Rabbanan. And in this particular case, the Rabbanan made their words as strong as Torah, and therefore Tanai doesn't work. Now, parenthetically, we ask, is it really true that Rav holds that Yerusha Baal is Rabbanan? Savar Yeshua Rabal Durabanan? Vatnan, we have a Mishnah, Meyochem and Brukomer, Hayoreshet Ishto. If a man inherits from his wife, Yachzir Livne Mishpacha, Vinakelahen, Min Hadamim. Meaning that he has to then return the property back to the family during Yovel, but he charges them, we think, light money, a low amount. Vavinan by my Kasavra, and we, in discussing this, asked, what does Rabbi Yochanan Brucker really believe? If he believes that the husband's inheritance is Doraita, why does he have to return it? Heirs don't have to return their property back to the estate and then redivide it every Yovel. And if Yerusha Baal's Drabanan, Domi Ma Evitayu, then why can he charge them anything? It should go back to them. Because Midoraita, it's still theirs. V'yamar Rav, Leolam Kasavar, so Rav said that he holds Yerusha Baal Doraita. Chagon Shaharishto Ishto Beit HaKvarot. The situation is where his wife bequeathed him. What he ended up getting was a Beit HaKvarot. Mishum Pekam Mishpacham Rabbanon Lishkol Domi V'lahader. It's the family plot. And so now, really, he should be able to keep it. And Yovel should not do anything to it. But because of the family name and because the family has an association with there, the rabbi said that he should return it to them. And Mayina Kelahimin Adamim, so what does it mean that he should give them for light money? It doesn't mean he should charge them a low price. Demei Kever Ishto, it means that he should deduct from that the price of his own wife's grave, because after all, his wife died. That's what happened, and he inherited. What did he inherit? He inherited land that belonged to her that turned out to be the family cemetery, the family plots. And so what he deducts is he deducts her particular plot because that's something that he had to take care of. So if, let's say, the whole area costs $5,000 and each plot is $500, he charges them $4,500. Not a cheap amount, but rather he deducts the price that he himself had to pay because that was his responsibility. Now, Kedetanya Mocher Kivro v'Derech Kivro Mamado Mekom Aspedo Ba'im Bnei Mishpacha V'Kovrin Oto Baal Korcho Shum Pekam Mishpacha. That bright is there just to tell us that there is such a thing as a family having a claim, even though legally the property may belong to somebody else, having a claim on their ancestral burial plot. All right, so that's why, so Rav explains, that's why even though Yerusha Tabal is Da'oraita, nonetheless, when he inherited from his wife, his deceased wife, a burial plot, that he has to give it back to the family, but he can, of course, charge them. Now, the only reason that we're concerned with saying that is because it seems to indicate that Rav holds that Yerushat HaBaal is the Oraita and not the Rabbanan. So the answer is, Rav L'Tamed Rav Yochanan Bruka Kamar. Rav was saying this within the context of Rav Yochanan Bruka's approach. V'lelo Sfirole. In other words, he said, I'll explain to what Rav Yochanan Bruka means. He means that he means to say that Yerushat HaBaal is the Oraita, etc., etc. But Rav said, but I sort of don't personally agree with that. I believe that Yerushat HaBaal is the Rabbanan, and therefore Rav makes the statement he does about Rabban Shimon Megamliel, Halacha Kidvarav V'lo Mita'amei. Everybody should have a wonderful day. We will pick up on the Mishnah and Daf Pei Daled Amud Aleph on the next podcast.